Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, and welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. First day of December. What? I have another great guest for you, as always, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time with very special guest, Chris Widener. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Podomatic, Deezer, iTunes, Rumble Video, Elon's Twitter 2.0, or anywhere you get your podcast at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode ever again. And thank you for listening. And for new listeners, I hope you like it. And happy holidays, y'all. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Chris Widener. Chris is widely recognized as one of the top speakers in the world today. He has spoken all over the world in places like Germany, Spain, Russia, China, Egypt, Singapore, Australia, and of course, all over the United States and Canada. His clients are a who's who of American business and organizations, including General Electric, Cisco Systems, Microsoft, and the Harvard Business School. Chris's dynamic, practical, and engaging speeches will have your audiences laughing one minute and learning timeless truths of success the next. Member of the Motivational Speakers Hall of Fame, one of Inc. magazine's top 100 leadership speakers, named one of the top 50 speakers in the world, Chris was hand selected by two of the legends of the speaking world to work with them, and he now carries on their legacy. Jim Rohn, one of the most successful speakers of the last 50 years and also known for being Tony Robbins' first mentor, made Chris his last protege. Chris and Jim co-authored the Jim Rohn One-Year Success Plan, as well as Jim's last book, The 12 Pillars, which has become an international bestseller. Zig Ziglar, considered to be the greatest motivational speaker of the 20th century, personally chose Chris to co-host his television show, True Performance. Chris's two books, The Angel Inside and The Art of Influence, are the only two fiction books Zig Ziglar endorsed in his entire life. Along with co-hosting True Performance, Chris also hosted his own show, Made for Success, where he interviewed some of the top business achievers and thought leaders of our time. Chris is the author of 20 books with 3 million copies in print in 13 languages and over 450 articles on success, leadership, sales, and motivation. His best-selling books include The Angel Inside, which he has also been optioned as a movie, The Art of Influence, The Leadership Rules, Live the Life You Have Always Dreamed Of, 12 Pillars, and the sequel to 12 Pillars, About All Else. Chris has also produced over 80 CDs and DVDs on a wide range of topics. Chris considers it a privilege to be able to speak to people, help them lead successful lives, become extraordinary leaders, and master salespeople. Wow, that's an impressive bio. And now you are here with me today. Thanks for coming on. How are you today, sir?
I'm fantastic. I'm going to take you on the road with me to do my introduction. I sound really great when you do that.
I've been known to not take a breath. So I've got, anyway. Well, like me, only much sooner, faster learner, I guess, you decided Washington wasn't for you and your family anymore. What did you like about Tennessee out of all the places you've been and seen?
Well, it's interesting, you know, how we ended up in Chattanooga, 50 years in the Seattle, Washington area, all around Seattle. I got involved in politics in the Washington state area. We can talk about that later if you like. And sure. Then moved to Scottsdale, spent 5 years in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I moved from a blue state to what I thought was a red state. And what I found out was it's not so much a red state as much as it is kind of a purple state. And of course, it's been changing there and they've got some issues down there. We have a couple of daughters that moved to the southeast. One goes to Vanderbilt there in Nashville. And the other is graduating next week from the University of Alabama. So roll tide there.
Wow. And so not too far.
Yeah, we thought, well, let's try to be near them. And we thought, well, Huntsville, Alabama is halfway in between Nashville and Tuscaloosa. I didn't want to live in Huntsville, Alabama. So I kind of looked around and Chattanooga is it's equidistant to both of those cities in sort of a triangular shape. And so we flew out there. And the funny thing is, you know, you listed all those places that I've spoken in. I truly have. I've spoken so many places all over the world, 2,500 speeches. And it's funny because I'll walk into an airport or I'll walk into a hotel and I'll go, oh, I've been here before. But I can't necessarily remember when.
Wow.
But in all of my travels, never been to Chattanooga, Tennessee. So we came out here in 2020 in the middle of the pandemic and loved it and loved the people and loved the area. My wife is from originally from Los Angeles and then Scottsdale. I'm from Seattle and then Scottsdale. And so neither of us had really lived in a place where we had the real change of the seasons as well. Yeah, you know, Washington does a little bit, but you know, with all the evergreen trees, Douglas firs, you don't get as much of that rich reds and orange and yellows and all that. So we on a whim said, let's move to Chattanooga. So we did it. And for those of you watching it, you can see there's the aquarium in downtown Chattanooga, and there's the one of the bridges that goes across the river there. And it's just it's a beautiful place with great people, and it's been a lot of fun. We've been here a little bit over a year.
So it lived up to your expectations so far, and compared to Washington.
Yeah.
So it was a leap of faith, and it's been the right thing for you.
Yeah. And you know, you can walk through the streets and there's nobody smoking crack, nobody going to the bathroom on the streets, you know, like you see in Seattle now. So it's still a beautiful place. We love it here.
Yeah. Like you said, you have two college age daughters. Did their upbringing have anything to do with you leaving Washington? I've made it very clear. Washington was a clear and present danger to my daughter and all women really in the state, actually. Do you find Tennessee to be a better place for her too?
Yeah. They love it here in Tennessee as well. I don't know if they'll stick around in Tennessee, you know, jobs take you other places, but I think that, the one at Vanderbilt may actually go to graduate school at Vanderbilt as well. So she'll be there for a little while longer. She's a junior in college. But no, we just love the lifestyle. We love the pace. You know, it's kind of funny. Coming from Seattle, my friends will say, what's Chattanooga like? And you'll laugh at this, Steve. I tell them it's the Spokane of Tennessee.
Spoke of Vegas.
Huh?
Spoke of Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Nashville is like, you know, we got Nashville, Brentwood, Franklin. It's like Seattle, Bellevue, Kirkland.
Yep.
And then you have Chattanooga way over in the east. And it's a lot like, it's actually, I always think of Spokane as being brown. People say, what's Spokane like? I'm like, it's brown. Because it was built, you know, it was built up when all they used was brown bricks. And, you know, so, and it's a little more blue collar, it's a little more rural, it's a little more that Chattanooga isn't necessarily like that, but it's more of an older, slower paced. There's a lot of great businesses here, but you know, the primary businesses here, I did a research on the biggest companies here in the Chattanooga area as a speaker. You know, I like to speak for local companies so I don't have to get on an airplane. And it's just, it's dominated by trucking and logistics. You know, most of the biggest companies here are either in the trucking business or the logistics business. And then you throw in a couple of hospitals and, you know, some of those things, but it's very much more of a blue collar type of area. And we love it. We live outside of Chattanooga in a suburb. You know, we have a 2-lane road to get to our housing development, and we're right underneath the White Oak Mountains, I think they're called. And it's fantastic. We love it here.
That's great. Yeah. My last night in Washington was in a hotel in Spokane. They were dog friendly, and I just was very happy to be out of King County. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Although I got to tell you something cool about Spokane. If I diss them and call them the Brown City, do you know what's the name of the really fancy hotel in downtown Spokane? I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, I can see it. I don't know. I didn't stay there.
It's like a regal old hotel. Do you know that hotel was the first hotel in America to have a phone in every room?
I did not know that.
Yeah. A little bit. That's the other thing you'll find out about me. If you're playing Trivial Pursuit, you want me on your team, because I know a little bit about almost everything.
Exactly. So, well, hopefully they don't need it to call 911. Tell us a little bit about your speaking career. I mean, I know you have tacked a little different now, and we'll talk about Hamilton Conservative in a second. You've had an amazing travel and business run doing motivational speakers and learn from some of the best. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, I got into speaking because my upbringing was so crazy. My dad died when I was 4, And my dad was the CPA, the chief financial officer of a company. At the time, they only had 150 architects. And it was NBBJ in downtown Seattle, right down there on King Street. They are now one of the largest architecture firms in the world, about 5,500, maybe 7,500 architects all around the world. And the interesting thing, he died in 1970, 150 architects. He did all of the finances for them with an abacus and a slide rule. which is kind of fascinating when you think about it. He died. We were living in Sandpoint Country Club. My mom couldn't afford the $400 a month mortgage payment. That house recently sold for over $3 million. And so she sold it, and it began a downward spiral. We lived in 28 homes. I went to 11 different schools. I got shipped off to live with relatives twice. My mom started flipping houses. I don't know why she didn't flip them in the same school district so I could stay in the same schools. So we moved around. She shipped me. I was a troubled kid, pretty troubled kid. So she shipped me off to live with some relatives a couple of times, once in the fourth grade, once in the ninth grade. I started drugs in the sixth grade. I was making most of my money betting the horses at Long Acres Horse Track. You probably haven't heard Long Acres in a long time because it's gone now. Now it's Emerald Downs. My cousins were they were in the horse business. In fact, my cousins, one of them is one of the top horse trainers in America today. He lives in California, and his brother now owns one of the top horses in America today. They've had a great run the last couple of years. So really crazy upbringing. When I graduated from college after getting my life together, my senior year of high school, I got asked, will you come speak to this high school group, this college group, this summer camp, you know, this youth group? And so I started speaking primarily to youth, you know, to talk to them about how I overcame all those troubles growing up. And then as I got older, my audiences got older, and I began to speak to folks kind of as a generic motivational speaker. The last 10 years or so, almost every one of my speeches has been based on a book I wrote called The Art of Influence, and it's about how to persuade others. It's primarily what I call character-based influence as opposed to tactical-based influence. So I don't teach you what to do. I teach you what to be. And when you learn how to be somebody who is respected and trusted and admired by other people, then they automatically open themselves up to your influence. So it doesn't rely on tactical things, you know, what to do, but it's really about attracting people to you based on who you are.
Nice. And I'm sure I'll get emails if I don't ask this question. How did you overcome those adversities?
I got invited. This is funny. I was summer before my senior year, and I was spending the night at a friend's house, and we were partakers in the marijuana and alcohol quite a bit. And it was a Sunday morning, and my friend's mother, all 4'11" of her, barged through the door and said, "Get up, we're going to Sunday school." Now, you have to understand, I had no clue what she meant. I'd never heard the term. I'd never gone to church. Well, I take that back. I'd gone to two Christmas Eve services in my entire life. And one of them was a Catholic midnight mass, and so I slept through it. The other was at a Dutch Reformed church up in the Northgate area. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I spent the night here. We're going to Sunday school. So we went to a little tiny Lutheran church, Mount Si Lutheran Church, at the corner of 8th and Ogle in North Bend, Washington. And they had a youth minister there. He was a good old boy from Helena, Montana. And he had two things that I needed at that moment in my life. Number one, size 11 cowboy boots, because I needed a swift kick in the rear end. And I'd never really had a male role model. I had one grandpa who ran off, and I met him one time in my life. I had another grandpa who died when I was young. My dad died when I was young. My brother's 13 years older than me. He moved out of the house and married a girl who hated my mother, so I rarely saw him. And so I needed a male role model. A father figure. And he was that for me. And then he also taught me about how God has a plan and a purpose for somebody's life. And he said, you know, you're wasting your life. You're talented. You're smart. You're gregarious. And God has a plan for your life. And it just was right time, right place. And that's what turned it around. I decided I wanted to live God's plan for my life rather than wasting it, you know, as a troublemaker and someone who's involved in drugs and alcohol.
That's great. All right. Well, God bless that you got it turned around. So let's talk about now the here and now. You wrote, conservatism is under attack, even in conservative places like Hamilton County. That's where Chattanooga is. The left is trying desperately to implement their radical agenda. Sadly, many conservatives feel like their voices aren't heard and even that their vote doesn't count. They need a place where they can get together and work alongside other conservatives. Hamilton County conservatives is that place. What's going on in Hamilton County? I thought Tennessee was the reddest of red states.
Well, and they call Chattanooga not just the Bible Belt, the buckle of the Bible Belt. And it really is. I mean, you know, church on every corner, and most people are culturally Christian or culturally faith-based. But what you're seeing is, and you see it in a lot of cities, you know, the city tends to be more liberal and the surrounding areas tend to be more conservative. But most recently, and of course, America is changing, and the melting pot has turned into different worldviews. You know, 100 years ago, most people came from the Judeo-Christian worldview. Now you have secular humanist worldview versus the Judeo-Christian worldview, and there's conflict there. And, you know, America is a place for freedom, and that's fantastic. But we need to also stand for our traditional conservative values. And one of the things that has happened since I got here and that Hamilton County conservatives got involved in was the drag show stuff that's going around. And I mean, who'd have known that Chattanooga, Tennessee would be ground zero for drag shows? And yet it is. And, you know, you remember probably we're recording this on December 1st, so it was probably middle of September, something like that. All hell broke loose because here in Chattanooga at the Wanderlinger Brewery, there was a drag show. Of course, people were already upset that they'd been happening so much. But at this particular drag show, there was video that was taken where a young girl was about 6 years old, tops 6 years old, and she was filmed stroking the outside of the genital area of one of the performers for 6 or 7 seconds.
It was like a mermaid.
Nobody told her to stop. The entertainer didn't back away, didn't swat her hand away. It was more than just an accidental brushing. It actually happened. And that caused massive outrage. And a lot of the groups were like, we're going to go march and we're going to stand on the street corner and we're going to yell at people. And I just, it's just not my way of doing things. You know, there are some people who actually make a good case that standing on the street corner actually helps because, you know, it makes people think, it raises awareness, but it certainly doesn't change anything per se. So I said, well, how about if Hamilton County Conservative starts a petition? So I reached out to Senator Bo Watson and our representative here, Greg Vital, and both of them said, we'd love to see you do that. So I said, okay, great. So we drummed up a ton of signatures in a very short period of time, turned those over to those two gentlemen. Bo took them to Senator Johnson, and Senator Johnson initiated and filed for legislation to come up in 2023 to make all drag shows 18 and over. And, you know, and of course,
if you can't borrow them completely from the state. I guess that's the next best thing.
And I don't want to, as conservatives and with strong libertarian leanings, I don't want them to, you know, you want, if you're a 45-year-old man and you want to dress yourself up like a woman and dance on tables, have at it. It's America, you know, have at it. I'm probably not coming, you know. And the other thing about drag shows, they've really changed. You know, drag shows used to be 20, 30 years ago. They used to be people who pretended they were Cher and, you know, flipped their hair and saying, I got you, babe. Yeah. And now they're handing out dollar bills for 7-year-olds to stuff in their pants. Very, very different kind of drag show nowadays. And so,
you know, Chris, part of the problem that I've seen, and I'll admit it, I have not gone to one, have not paid for admission, but I have seen plenty of videos that show what's going on inside those doors. The parents are bringing them, right? I mean, it used to be once upon a time, if you wanted to go see an R-rated movie, you had to be 18 or over. And then there was parental guidance, PG, PG-13, whatever. These are bars, right? And I guess the downtown Paramount Theater or whatever it's called there in Chattanooga is letting them in the door. probably paid for admission, if not it's library, you know, drag queen story hour. The parents are letting this happen.
Well, that's one of the arguments. One of the arguments is, wait a minute, these are their parents are bringing them.
Yeah.
You can't tell the parents they can't. Well, government tells parents a lot of things that they can and cannot do with their children. You know, you can't let your children sleep out on the front porch in the middle of winter with no clothes on, you know, or lightly, because it's child endangerment. You can't take your child to an NC-17 movie. You can't take your child into a bar in most states. There's all sorts of things that we tell our parents that they can't let their children do or can't have their children do. And so we decided on 18. We even got some pushback saying it should be 21. And I said, look, if you can go die for your country, you can go watch a dude dressed up like a woman, is my opinion. But we tell them they can't smoke cigarettes. We tell them they can't drink liquor. We tell kids all the time what they can and cannot do. And so we just decided 18 was a good age, because if you can go into the military, you can go watch a drag show. But it solves all the problems. It still allows drag shows to happen for people that want to be in the drag shows or go to drag shows, but it also protects the children. It wipes out all the park stuff, all the library stuff, all the school stuff. And it, in my mind, it's actually a pretty good compromise. It doesn't infringe on the rights of the performers, but it protects the children from being sexualized at an early age.
Yeah, it's no different than the age of driver's license or cigarette smoking. You're absolutely right. Now, I don't want anyone to get misperception here. This is not all Hamilton County Conservatives does. It just happens to be topical. You are a 501c4 organization, so any donations anyone wants to make, and I hope you do, would be tax deductible. But the vision of the HCC, right? That's what you're calling it.
Let me jump in real quick, though. It is not tax deductible. We are a nonprofit, but it is not a tax deductible. That would be a 501c3. But if they wanted to donate to our cause, we'd love it. It's hcconservatives.com, and we would love that. But it isn't all that we do. So sorry to interject that. I just don't want anybody to get
No, that's exactly good. And we'll repeat that at the end, too. But the mission of it, or the vision, is to actually bring people together to promote conservative ideas, policies, laws, and candidates for office. And it says we will teach, train, and advocate. So I want to know about the teaching and the training. We will be proactively engaged in the political process, making the case for traditional conservative ideas in the political marketplace. The left and, in my opinion, Uniparty, and sometimes the corporate welfare party, has shifted the Overton window so much, Chris. What are traditional conservative ideas in your mind?
I think traditional family, looking out for the family. I think financial, you know, how would you put it? Financial conservatism, right? Not spending like drunken sailors. And you're right. There's a Uniparty. There's people that love to spend that money in both the right and the left. Sort of going back to the good old days. And I know that people say, oh, well, you know, that's regressive. I don't think it is regressive. In my opinion, life would be a lot better for people if we, you know, sometimes progress isn't necessarily progress. You can move forward, but you can go to a worse place. And I find that we are in a worse place now than we've ever been before, particularly when you look at the administration now and what's been happening just since the last presidential election. More fentanyl, more child sex trafficking, more people coming over the border, less energy independence, in fact, no energy independence. You know, there's just problems on every front, higher gas prices, inflation. I think that if we were to act more conservatively, life would be better for a lot of people. Now, I also, as I mentioned earlier, I have strong libertarian leanings. I do know that there are different people who have different lifestyles, and I've advocated for example, typically people say, well, conservatives are against the LGBTQ community. And I don't necessarily believe that. In fact, you know, the Republicans have an official group called the Log Cabin Republicans, and have for decades. And a lot of people in the LGBTQ community find their home in the Republican Party and in conservatism, because they find that they are conservative in many ways. I wrote op-ed, or just an editorial that they allow you to do in the Chattanoogan here. And it was about how conservatives and the LGBTQ community can get along with one another, because I really do believe that we can. It's by allowing people to be free, but having some guardrails. And it was specifically around this 18 plus. You're free, but we have guardrails. And even people within the LGBTQ community have said, children should not be at these things. Just like people in the straight community would say, children should not be at a strip club. Right. I mean, it doesn't mean you're anti-straight people. You know, no, we're not anti-straight people. Well, you want to be a strip dancer? Go ahead, start your club. Nobody under the age of, 18 or 21 or whatever the age is to get into them. But so I think we can get along as long as we understand that we have to accept one another, even if we might not approve of one another. And I think there's a big difference there. I'm a conservative, born again Christian. And I know there's a lot of people who say, that's horrible. You're horrible. How could you believe in the sky fairy? And how could you believe in conservatism and all that kind of stuff? You don't have to approve of me. I really don't care whether you approve of me or not, but you do have to accept me. You have to accept that we all live in this place together. And that's my theory around people who are different than me in regard to all sorts of, whether it's alternative lifestyles or different religions or whatever. I may not approve of it. I may not agree with you, but we all have to live here together.
And that's exactly what the movements of the ERA and even the Black Panthers and I suppose Black Lives Matter, they all say that you must tolerate me, but I won't tolerate you because you stand on that stupid constitution written by old men. And old white men. Yeah. I didn't want to be racist,
but here's the other thing.
But your motto is really good. And it says, I think what you say, I want to hear you expound on it. One can put 1,000 to flight while two can put 10,000 to flight. Together, we are more powerful.
Yeah.
That's the big tent you're talking about.
Yeah, we want to put people together so we can actually make a difference. Now, here's where we really come into a problem. And I wrote an article on my website, Politicrossing, a couple of weeks ago. And you have, it's sort of an alliteration, and they all start with A. You have acceptance, and we need to accept each other. But most of the people on the left, acceptance isn't enough. They demand approval. You know, if somebody says, hey, you want to be gay, be gay. You want to be a transsexual, be transsexual. You want to dance on, you want to be, drag shows, go ahead and do it. You want to do this, that, and the other thing, have at it. You do you, I'll do me. But I don't approve of it. I don't necessarily have to approve of it, but I can accept it. Well, that offends them so much, they demand that that you approve it. You must approve it. Then they've gone one step further, and you must accept me, and not just approve of me. You must become an advocate for me. Now you must go into the marketplace and say, this person must be accepted and approved, and you must be an advocate of it. You know, the pronoun thing is an interesting thing to me. You're a man, you want to call yourself she, her, fine, go for it. You were born Bob, you want to call yourself Sue, go ahead, call yourself Sue. Born Sue, you want to call yourself Bob, fine, I accept that, no problem. Don't necessarily approve of it, and I'm not going to become an advocate of it. They want you to become an advocate of it. And if not, then they cancel you because they demand ultimately total acquiescence.
That's right. From live and let live to live and let's be active or activists. Absolutely. Yes. So yes. Tell us other ways that HCC will work. I got a list here of about six things, candidate education, voter guides and education, candidate forums, training, social media influence, email newsletter, live events such as prayer breakfast, guest speakers, get out the vote efforts. Tell us about a couple of those that are your favorites.
Yeah, we actually just, we're starting our monthly meeting. We're going to be meeting at Common Table, which is a fantastic restaurant owned by the Calvary Chapel Church in downtown Chattanooga. It's a full-blown, they have a great chef that they've brought in, and they have opened up their doors to Hamilton County conservatives to host. It'll be the first Wednesday of every month. This month, we are kicking it off with a Christmas luncheon. And then next month, we're going to have Brandon Lewis. It's going to kick off. He's the head of Tennessee Conservative News. He's going to be
our guest. He's been on the show. Yep. We love him.
He's going to be our guest speaker the first Wednesday of January in 2023, kicking us off. And so we're going to start gathering conservatives together at a monthly luncheon. But one of the things that we want to do, we want to serve our community. You know, one of my dreams is to have 100 people with Hamilton County conservative shirts on to go down into an area of Chattanooga that has never, they don't even know a Republican. They've never even seen a conservative. And we want to help little old ladies spruce up their yards, and we want to paint schools, and we want to serve our community. I want people to look and go, that's a bunch of conservatives out there. Out. And then my ultimate goal is, because I talk about influence, that's my primary thing. When an election comes up and the Democrats are yelling, conservatives hate the poor, conservatives hate Black people, conservatives hate gays and lesbians. I want the poor and the Black and the gays and the lesbians who always have been taught that Republicans and conservatives hate them to go, that doesn't make any sense, because they're down at our place like four times a year helping. You know, they're running the soup kitchens and they're painting schools, and I don't buy your BS anymore. So I really do believe that as conservatives, we need to serve our communities. We can't just yell, hey, come vote for us, you know, every time there's an election. We really need to get them involved, because I think that in many of those communities, there's lots that we share, lots of shared values that we share with lots of communities that are typically told that conservatives and Republicans hate them.
Yeah. And one of the things that we're seeing up here in Williamson County, slightly different county than your county, I would say, obviously the school boards, but the school boards have been somewhat powerless against the federal government reaching into the director of schools that was appointed by Governor Lee, Penny Schwinn is her name. And then of course the textbooks, the libraries that are putting the controversial books in the library at the reach of the children, the very young children, fourth grade, third grade. Do you have this same problem down there?
Yeah, I think it's all over the place. You know, the education has been co-opted. I don't know if you've ever read the book Slouching Towards Gomorrah by Robert
Borden. Yeah.
You know, he said, and this was 1999 when he wrote that book, and he said, look, for the last 30 years, they made a decision. The left has a coordinated effort to take over colleges and universities, all education, to take over politics, the political world, to take over
culture,
media, Hollywood, and they have. And they have groomed and raised up an entire generation that doesn't understand logic. They don't understand civics. They don't understand history. They don't understand any of that. And now they're just brainless. And then they're just swayed by this manipulative rhetoric and propaganda. And they just march lock, stock, and barrel. In fact, in the middle of the COVID lockdowns, I did a video called the sleeper cells have been activated. and that's what they did. They for 30, well, now for 50, 60 years. And again, Bork wrote that in 99. Now we're in 2023. They created sleeper cells. They created tens of millions, maybe 150 million people all across America that have been educated to believe that God is dead, and that Republicans hate, you know, minorities and poor people, and will kill your grandmother if they had the chance. They're, you know, all these kinds of things. And then they just flipped that switch and everybody went, tell me what to do next. You know,
the hope for us is that a place like Chattanooga, like you said, the buckle of the Bible Belt, or what we see in Florida, or what we recently saw in Virginia, are the backstops against this. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping, I want to hear from you, that the Hamilton County conservatives, the group that you're gathering together, are that front lines against this wokeness that we are so concerned about, because
I'll give you an example.
Anywhere, it's got to be where you sit right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you an example. Last week, a few weeks ago, there was the shooting in the gay nightclub, and as the left always does, they try to politicize it. And so the head of the Democrat Party here in Hamilton County, they came out and said, more gay people are going to die if this 18 and over drag show law gets passed, because it will empower the people who hate gays and lesbians, and they're going to start killing people and, you know, all this stuff. Ironically, they don't want to talk about the fact that the person who actually did the killing wants to be called they and them.
Binary.
They backpedal from that pretty quickly. And so that became news. And they called me up and they said, would you come on the news and give your thoughts? And I said, sure. And so we were the lead opening story on the nightly news here on Channel 12. And it was this woman who runs the Democratic Party here in Hamilton County and me. And one of our board members said, isn't it interesting? They didn't call the local Republican Party. They didn't call the mayor's office of the county, who's a Republican. They didn't call any of these folks. They called Hamilton County conservatives. And I thought, that really is interesting. We are really standing for those kinds of things. Now, you ask, what's the backstop? I'd like to believe that the backstop is really results. Because, you know, politics is basically 40-40-20. You got 40% of the people are going to vote Republican all the time. You got 40% of the people going to vote Democrat all the time. You could run a brass monkey as your candidate and they would vote for it. You could run John,
like they just did in Pennsylvania.
I was just going to say, you took it right out of my mouth. I was going to say, you could run John Fetterman and they would still vote for it, right? But now you've got this squishy middle of 20%, and basically they vote pocketbook. I was sitting down at a coffee shop with our congressman and our state rep, and we were talking about all this kind of stuff, and they were talking about macroeconomics and all these kinds of things. And this woman walks in. She's maybe 28 or 30 years old. She's got two or three little kids, you know, under the age of six. And I pointed at her and I said, you know, here's the deal. That woman doesn't know anything about macroeconomics. You know what she knows, though? She knows that her food bill used to be $900 a month and now it's $1,500 a month. And our representative turned to me and said, that's the kind of messaging we need. It is the kind of messaging we need.
I was so angry when Biden came out and took a victory lap telling the seniors, hey, I've just given you the largest raise on Social Security in the history of the United States. And everybody said, yay, let's vote for more of that in November. But they didn't understand that the purchasing power of those dollars have almost been cut in half because inflation is out of control, not by design, people just don't understand economics.
You've probably seen the meme. This is one of my favorite memes lately. It says millions of people pour into the stores on Black Friday to purchase products at the price they paid before Biden became president. That's true, right?
That's true.
So I feel like the backstop is results. Because here's these people. I hate the Republicans. I hate the Democrats. Or I could care less about either one of them. But they go, my gas is more expensive. My food is more expensive. We've got millions of people pouring over our border. That can't possibly be good. You know, we have no energy independence. And they just look at it and go, okay, this is all Democrats doing this. So we need to vote Republican. And that's what I hope is the backstop, is, you know, all the craziness that's going on, that sane, rational people in the middle will say, you know, this is it. I did an article the other day on Political Crossing about what President Trump needs to do to win in 2024. If he's our candidate or our nominee, he needs to stop talking about the election and he needs to just compare and contrast. If you just show up and compare and contrast with me, $2 gas. With the Democrats, $6 gas. With me, energy independence. With them, we're buying our fuel from Venezuela. With me, 20,000 people coming across the border a month. With them, 250,000 people. Like just on and on and on and say, take a pick. Yeah. Just pick. Which kind of America do you want to live in?
Yeah. I mean, part of me couldn't help but notice that, you know, Disney raised their theme park prices twice this year. The stock's in the toilet, so they're probably not getting a lot of people paying that. But then... we talked about the parents at the drag queen story art. That's pretty cheap entertainment. So we still have this situation where they used to say, like, well, if steak costs this much and it's rising with inflation, eat hamburger and you get the same amount of protein at a lower price. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of like that. The culture now is saying, well, if you can't get the high-end, wonderful Broadway show that you used to get 5 or 6 years ago when Trump was in office,
let's go watch Larry the Mechanic dress up like a woman and dance.
And bring your kids. It's family friendly. So, I mean, that's the kind of world we live in, unfortunately. So we're probably going to run out of time here pretty soon, but I want to know, on the list of things that you guys are doing is training. What does training look like?
Well, as a professional speaker, I'd like to train candidates. And of course, as a 501c4, we can't be partisan, really. We can be based on values and those kinds of things. And so we would open it to the public. If you plan on running for office, You know, I feel like messaging is one of the things. You and I have a good mutual friend from Washington State who I helped train. When he decided to run for governor, he came to me, he said, "You're the professional speaker. Help me, you know, figure this out." He was already a very, very good gifted speaker, but I worked on his campaigns and spent a lot of time with him. And one of the things about him was he stayed on message. He drove people nuts because people say, "I've heard this 15 times." He goes, "Great. You know the message then?" And they go, "Yeah, I've heard it all before." And he goes, "Great. Go tell your friends."
Nice.
And you know, you got to stay on message. And the problem with a lot of people on the stump is they get bored with their own message because they can't do it seven times a day.
Right.
And they get bored with it, so they change it, not realizing that this is probably the first time anybody's ever heard it, that sixth time you're giving it that day. And so helping them, training them with messaging and speaking abilities and, you know, some of those kinds of things, we'll train some people that way. And that's something that I feel like we could really help with.
Yeah, that's a great point. Back in the day, I had heard Bill Clinton speak, as a matter of fact, and, you know, very dynamic speaker, probably the greatest communicator since Ronald Reagan, love him or hate him. And then I went to hear him a second time. I said, "This is the exact same thing. I have, you know, what, I just wasted my time. I could have just memorized what I heard the first time." And so I never heard him again, but that's how they roll. The values that you hold is a great list here: honesty, integrity, justice, positive and optimistic, service-minded, speaking the truth in love. Do you have candidates coming up or at least elections coming up soon in the, let's say, judges or school boards or superintendent of schools? I don't know how you guys deal with it down there in Hamilton. Anything that we could keep an eye on to see if those six values are held by them?
Well, we just had like 30 judges or something here in that were up for re-election. It was crazy. I mean, how long our ballot was here. But, wow. You know, in 2024, we're going to have more of those races coming up. And, you know, we won't have our local mayor's race again because that just happened. But, you know, we'll have presidential race. We're going to have, of course, representatives and school boards and all those kinds of things. So we're going to target some of those particular places and try to find some good candidates and help them run and give them some support.
Very cool. All right, Chris. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I think everyone's going to love you. You have a great personality. And we are nearing the end here. So please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and Hamilton County Conservatives and all the other things that you're into.
Yeah, we would love your support at Hamilton County Conservatives. I will tell you this. Nobody takes a salary. This is a labor of love for me. Nobody's getting paid to do anything other than our vendors who help support us with our email and, you know, our legal and our bookkeeping and that kind of stuff. But everybody who's involved does it because we're passionate about keeping Hamilton County conservative. You can go to hcconservatives.com and you can make a one-time gift or an ongoing gift. And we would love your support in our little neck of the woods. We're trying to take care of our neck of the woods, and Steve, you and the folks there in Nashville taking care of your neck of the woods. And we all gotta farm our own plot. And so that's what we're doing here. We would love any sort of support. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. And I look forward to coming down and visiting you in Chattanooga. So happy holidays to you and your family. And I wanted to say go Vanderbilt, but I just can't.
I know. You know, it's how I was when my daughter went to University of Alabama. People said, "Oh, how are you dealing with that?" And I said, "Well, I'll tell you how I handled it." In order to get myself to be able to say Roll Tide, I watched Star Wars like 10 times and I rooted for Darth Vader. And by the end, I was able to say, "Go Roll Tide." So,
yeah, I always just watch the submarine movie with Gene Hackman. That does it for me. Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, thanks again. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks. I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on my mind. Steve, you just met a very, very impressive person. What do you think of him?
I am very impressed, and I'm looking forward to getting to know him a little bit more. I'm going to go to his website and their organization. We had a great little chat offline, and just thanks, Steve, for bringing on this kind of an individual and all the people you do. But I get to learn more about the people around me and to know that there's a lot of hope out there. He gives me a lot of hope. He's coming from a place of let's get things done, and here's how you do it attitude, and I love that. So I love what Chris is doing.
That's right. Thanks for saying that. Tennessee has been a fertile hunting ground for interesting people who, like we say, are lovers of truth and are making a positive impact in our community. And it doesn't get any better than that. Taking a community that's already pretty darn good and making it better. Gotta love that. Okay, producer Steve, there's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do things, as we just heard. I know, very profound. I'm a delicate genius, but I want to talk about this. Florida school boards flip red, immediately oust superintendents who oversaw mask mandates. Bye-bye. Two school boards with conservative majorities parted ways with their school superintendents in November, both of whom oversaw the implementation of mask mandates into the fall of 2021. Huh, not very good political idea, was it? On November 29th, Sarasota County School Superintendent Brennan Asplin agreed to step down after the school board criticized mask mandates, which Aspen backed. While on November 22nd, Brevard County Superintendent Mark Mullins, who faced backlash for supporting an extended mask mandate, agreed with the school board to enter into separation negotiations. Both school districts extended their mask mandates into the fall of the 21-22 school year. In the 2021-22 school year, Brevard Public Schools extended its emergency mask mandates through November 28th, giving parents an opt-out option, according to the school website. What is happening in Washington right now with masks?
Well, I don't think anybody's wearing them up here either, Steve.
Well, here's how you do it. Let's listen to clip number one.
Well, the Loudoun County School Board taking heat from dozens of frustrated parents tonight. They're upset about the school system's transgender policy, vaccine mandates for athletes, and mask requirements. Fox 5's Paris Jones has the details.
Yeah, many of the parents here tonight not happy with some of the school board's recent decisions. Some parents even had to be escorted out because of the mask requirement.
I hope you got that on camera. This is outrageous. People in here with their, like, face lace and their face shields that are plastic, not stopping anything. All you want is submission to a lie. All right.
Another topic that had a lot of parents emotional tonight, the new vaccine requirement for student athletes, which goes into effect November 8th. That vaccine requirement will only apply for winter and spring sports, not the fall sports. Any student athlete who cannot be vaccinated because of a religious or medical exemption will need to do weekly COVID tests.
How do you justify allowing the bleachers at sporting events to be packed without masks or distancing or vaccine mandates? Do you not see this as discrimination against the athletes and coaches actually engaged in the sport?
Where is my body, my choice? So it only works for abortions and transgender? Nothing else? Where is your medical degree that you have the right to impose this on our children?
Also on tonight's agenda, a vote on a revised conduct policy for employees that was adopted, addressing the rights of employees to free speech. It acknowledges free speech rights of school system employees outside of work, but still requires support of the school system's policy on the job. The controversy grew when elementary school teacher Tanner Cross said he would not follow policy 8040, which allows transgender students to use restrooms, locker rooms, and be called names corresponding with their gender identity.
How does spending millions of dollars on retrofitting bathrooms for 50 students affect the 81,000 students academically?
There were also a group of parents pushing for the school board to adopt a virtual learning option, especially for those who have kids who aren't old enough to be vaccinated yet.
That was a year ago, Steve.
That was a year ago, and that was Ohio, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but what was the title of that one?
Loudoun County.
Loudoun County, okay. We heard one of the parents saying, you know, my body, my choice, you know, and then we had another one saying, hey, what are you doing? This is supposed to be in favor of the people in the stands and the coaches. But the point I'm trying to make here is that going in front of the school board and being heard like that is absolutely, absolutely the most important fight we're going to have in 2023. What do you think?
I agree. And I think everybody needs to continue to get out there. And if my kids were in school, I would be all over it. My son was junior / senior when that whole COVID thing mandates, and he was Zoom, and then he got to go back and play sports, and he still had to wear the stupid mask on in the spring of 2021, and totally outrageous. But yeah, I if my kids, I would either have them yanked, private school, homeschooled, or I'd be fighting like tooth and nail at my local school board.
That's exactly right. And so you're a parent, I'm a parent, we're showing parents, but there is a third party that gets involved in this. Play clip number two, and let's hear how difficult this fight really is.
The Ohio School Boards Association is cutting ties with the National School Boards Association. The reason? Frustration over a recent request for federal intervention at school board meetings. Now, in a letter to the president, the NSBA wrote to ask for help as administrators and educators deal with threats in response to COVID-19 and mask policies. The Ohio Association has responded by ending its affiliation with a national group. In a statement, the association emphasized the importance of meaningful public input in the decision-making process, but added, quote, dealing with such interference should be dealt with at the local level, not by federal officials.
Yep.
There you go. There you go. We've been talking about this a lot. The money came with strings attached. The national woke agenda is pushed down all the way into the schools. Let's jump into clip three and hear if anybody is fighting back against this or not.
Senator Hawley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Garland, on October 4th, you issued an unprecedented memo that involves the Department of Justice and the FBI and local school districts, local school boards, nothing like it in our country's history. It was based, you've testified, on this letter from the National School Board Association that we now know the White House was involved in writing. They've retracted the letter. They've apologized for the letter. They say they regret the letter, but you won't retract the memo and said earlier that you have no regrets. And you've defended yourself repeatedly today before this committee by saying, well, you're focused on violence. But now, of course, we've seen the memo from your own Justice Department advising state and local and other prosecutors about all of the different federal causes of action that they can bring against parents that are not about violence. They're about harassment and intimidation. I'm looking here at this memo. It identifies no fewer than 13 possible federal crimes involving harassment and intimidation, including making annoying phone calls. Do you think a parent who makes a phone call to a school board member that she has elected, that that school board member deems annoying, should be prosecuted, General Garland?
No, I don't. And the Supreme Court has made quite clear that the word intimidation with respect to the constitutional protection, it's one that directs a threat to a person with the intent of placing the victim in fear of bodily harm or death. Prosecutors who investigate these cases know the Supreme Court's. This is a very famous leading case.
Prosecutors do, but parents don't, General Garland. Do you think that a parent who looks at the 13 different federal crimes that your Justice Department has identified they might be subject to and prosecuted for, like making annoying phone calls, do you think that they're going to feel that they're welcome to speak up at a school board meeting? How about this one? They could be prosecuted for using the internet, I guess that would be Facebook, in a way that might cause emotional distress to a victim. Is that a crime of violence?
Senator, I haven't seen the memo that you're
talking
about.
You?
And I don't, even from the description, it doesn't sound like it was addressed to parents.
Wow. Wow.
Well, thank you, Josh Hawley. I'm glad somebody is paying attention. I'm going to be watching him very closely for the next several years. What do you think of that?
You can see how legally they know how to use the language. And just like the judge was saying, oh, well, we don't mean it like just somebody making a phone call. We want people need to know that it's about threats. Well, the fact is, when you use propaganda and you use fear, as we talked in our last or a couple different episodes ago, the average person doesn't know this, Steve. They don't know this, and they're just
nor should they.
And they shouldn't. No,
they know how to parent. They know what's right and wrong. They shouldn't have to get involved in the Supreme Court decisions made in 1755 or whatever the case may be. But Let me read this to you. This is the problem. Far left progressive and socialist candidates continue to gain significant traction at both the federal and state levels of government. A new analysis of the 2022 midterm elections conducted by the Heartland Institute Socialism Research Center finds that socialist candidates in federal and statewide elections were overwhelmingly successful in their bids for elected office. In total, 132 socialist candidates were tracked, 78 at the state level and 54 at the federal level. Our analysis found 120 of these far-left candidates were victorious, a 90.9% victory rate.
Wow.
I have a list right here. I go down. You happen to be under Jayapal. She was one of them. Only two in Tennessee. They happen to be the two Democrats, one from Nashville, one from Memphis, as expected. But boy, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, some of the most populous states in the country, overwhelmingly packed with this socialism. Now the good news. Please play clip number four.
So in Carville, Tennessee, it is a conservative district, and I knew going into the race there would be a candidate that was supported by probably the establishment. I had to say both all three of the conservative candidates were great people, but I knew that at least one of them would be backed by the establishment, the Republican Party, even though we don't have partisan elections. You know, you can always, if someone gives a donation, in my opinion, that's an endorsement. And so I had to learn, what can we do to out campaign our opponents? And one thing that I think conservatives are, that one thing that conservatives need better practice on is learning to use their opponent strategies against them and using new strategies. I would say is that not every campaign is the same, and you shouldn't use the same strategies for every single campaign. I believe that you need to find certain strategies that are for your campaign, your candidate, and you must stay consistent throughout the whole campaign. Yes, some strategies might change, little things here and there, but I'd say that you need to develop a plan and you need to execute it throughout the campaign and not get off
just like what Chris was saying.
That map. I would say, you know, we've had issues during the primary. A lot of these principled conservative candidates are not able to get through the primary and lose to either the incumbent, or if it's an open seat, the rhino or the establishment picked. That's because it's not their fault. It's because a lot of them are not using new strategies and strategies that are useful for their campaign and for their candidate. And even once they get through the primary, you still need to learn what your Democrat opponent's strategies are, and you need to learn how to use them against them, or you need to learn how to do it better than them.
That's how you do it.
Amen. Amen.
Yep. Tyler Yabara, hopefully I pronounced that right, an 18-year-old conservative political activist, recently led a campaign to install a conservative candidate into a highly contested school board seat in Collierville, Tennessee. That's how you do it. Last one, please play clip number five.
Dramatic video of a school board meeting on mask mandates descending into chaos is being seen around the world.
You can leave freely, but we will find you and we will never be.
We're now learning that one anti-masker at the meeting in Tennessee is a former Disney star.
My name's Lee Allen Baker, and I'm a California refugee.
Lee Allen Baker starred in the Disney Channel sitcom Good Luck Charlie for 4 seasons.
I'm so glad we're friends again.
She also had roles in The King of Queens and other sitcoms.
Where's Doug?
She told the board what made her move from California to Tennessee.
I gave up everything there, a really successful Hollywood career, television shows, gave it all up for freedom.
Her anti-masker stance raised the roof.
There are these books that I have, and I have them as a gift for you, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers, and also the Bible. And these guarantee my freedom and yours and our children's to breathe
time.
Oxygen.
Former Disney star gives anti-mask rant. I mean, could that be more of a dichotomy of all time? So my governor, Bill Lee, signed an executive order giving parents ability to opt out of school mask mandates. He wrote, districts will make the decision they believe are best for their schools, but parents will have the ultimate decision making for the individual child's health and well-being. I will not be calling a special session at this time. While we deal with this issue, it remains important that we keep our schools open and in person, as we've seen the devastating loss of progress our kids have had academically when schools were remote or closed. Parents, if your children aren't feeling well, keep them at home. Stay in touch with your pediatrician. Good common sense will go a long way. I commend school boards across the state, as most of you kept your schools open last year and are committed to doing so again this year. When they don't hear from you, they think you're okay with it. Yes. And that you agree. Yep. You got to be active. We're not the tiny minority they want us to believe. Right, Steve?
I 100% agree. You just have to make your voice known. That's what I did. I fired off letters to the my governor and to numerous news outlets, and I got one newspaper to carry it, and that was it. But at least I made an open letter and made it available to voice my opinion.
Yeah. Well, in closing, I just want to read this. More millennials going to church now than before the pandemic. More millennials are attending church now than before the Chinese coronavirus pandemic struck, a report from Christianity Today's October issue found. More millennials attend church weekly now than before the start of the pandemic. According to a Barna Group survey of 13,000 adults, roughly 16% of regular churchgoers have not returned to services at all in 2022. But weekly attendance among those born between 1981 and 1996 has risen from 21% to, listen to this, 39% this year.
Wow.
Hopefully they have a spillover effect on Gen Z, like Tyler, who we heard. I believe they will. Merry Christmas, y'all. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the Mill Creek View podcast. Just go to Rumble, Spotify, or anywhere and hit the subscribe button. Thanks for doing it. Some of the biggest challenges in relationships come from the fact that most people enter a relationship in order to get something. They're trying to find something who's going to make them feel, it's not easy, folks. They're trying to find someone who's going to make them feel good. In reality, the only way a relationship will last is if you see your relationship as a place that you go to give and not a place that you go to take. Here's another one. What makes a relationship work is things in common. What makes it passionate is that things are very different. Last one. If that person feels that you respect them, you honor them, you accept them, you will own them as long as you remain open. Tony Robbins, an entrepreneur, number one New York Times bestselling author, philanthropist, and the nation's number one life and business strategist. He has empowered more than 50 million people from 195 countries around the world through his audio programs, educational videos, and live seminars. For more than 4.5 decades, millions of people have enjoyed the warmth, humor, and transformational power of Tony's business and personal development events. And remember, Chris's mentor and his last protege. Now you know. Well, that's it for this episode. Hope you liked it. Thank you, Chris Widener. Keep on motivating folks to do good. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, Editor-in-Chief, MillCreekViewOnline.com. New edition out today. I did this last time, hopefully not every time, but Christy McVeigh of Fleetwood Mac died this week at age 79. So in honor of her, rest in peace, and still waiting for peace in our time. But most of all,